perhaps one of the more fascinating kavachomers in Shas appeared in this week's parsha and last week's parsha, Parsha Zveira, and it's a kavachomer that I'm sure that many people here are familiar with. But looking at the second Mar Mokom on the sheet, there is a discussion about the behavior of Hanani, Mishael, Azariah based on the frogs and the behavior of the frogs in Mitzrayim. The Torah tells us that there was a promise that the frogs would be in the ovens and in the mixing bowls. So the Gemara learns out that when is it that the mixing bowl is next to the oven? When do you have a mixing bowl next to a vessel that you cook with? That's when the oven is hot. So the frogs literally jumped into ovens that were hot and gave up their life, al pi kiddush Hashem, to sanctify God's name. That was the decision the frogs made. So the Gemara tells us in Pesachim and Daf Nun Gimel Amud Beis the following kavachomer. The Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, when they were being persecuted by Nebuchadnezzar, and they were being forced to bow down to an idol that was in front of them, they darshaned for themselves a kavachomer, and they said, if the frogs jumped into the oven, al pi kiddush Hashem, then certainly that should be our behavior as well. And they also plunged into the oven as well to die for Kiddush Hashem. It's a fascinating Sfas Emes that appears in Maseches Pesachim that what they learned out was the following. The frogs gave their life for Kiddush Hashem and they were saved from the ovens, supposedly according to the Medrash. And we too, just like the frogs were saved, so we too will take the risk to give our lives and to die, al pi kiddush Hashem. That's what the Sfas Emes says. So they learned out their whole decision-making process based on the decision of the frogs in Mitzrayim. And again, if you glance at Mar Malkum number 2, that's what the Gemara says. Anybody have a problem with this Gemara? Just by show of hands. Okay, so what's the obvious problem? So the first problem is that if in some circumstance that you have a pet or that did something, al pi kiddush Hashem, I'm not sure if that should be the decision-making process that we as people would use to dictate our own behavior. But even more fundamental to that, and from a more halakhic perspective, the obvious problem is why do you need to turn to the behavior of frogs to make a decision to not worship Avodah Zarah? I have to darshan a kavachomer from what a frog decided to do. Wouldn't that be the decision anyway, based on the normal principles of Shas, that a person is not allowed to go ahead and to bow down to an idol? Why do you need the frogs under those circumstances to dictate the behavior of Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah? This is the famous question raised by all the Rishonim, and the Rishonim give different answers. So a person looks in Tosvos, Mar Malkum number 3, so Tosos gives two different answers, but both of which really hinge on the same concept. Both of them hinge on the same idea. One day in Tosvos is that they could have escaped. They could have made a run for it. They chose to stay behind and to sacrifice their life, al pi kiddush Hashem, even though they had the option to not do that. That's one answer in Tosvos. Please, listen. They had, what's that? No. Hanani, Mishael, Azariah learned from the frogs the following. We don't have to go ahead and give our lives because we could have escaped somehow. We'll choose to do so based on the model of what the frogs did, and that this is an opportunity to be Mekadoshim Shemayim. Again, obviously the frogs don't say Habachira, but again, so to learn out this idea of looking for opportunities, Mekadoshim Shemayim, even though it's not a classic case of Yarva Yavur. And the other day in Tosvos is something which has been debated widely, and namely that which Nebuchadnezzar wanted them to bow down to was not in reality Avodah Zarah. It was not idol worship. It was just what's referred to throughout Shas as Endarte Shomelech. It was some type of symbol of the kingship, right? Often you have a totalitarian figure, and they have a idol of themselves, or pictures of themselves, and as a way of subjugating people towards their honor and towards their kingship, they'll make a person bow down to, and this is certainly the case here, bowing down to the Ndarte Shamelech, to the symbol of the leader, the Nebuchadnezzar itself. So this was not a case of Avodah Zarah. This was not a case where they had to go ahead and give their life. It was simply the Ndarte Shamelech. Based on the Kavachomer from the Tzfardeya, they said, you know what, we're not going to do it. We're going to give up our life instead. And that's the Kavachomer that they were Nosei, that's the Kavachomer they darshed out from the frogs. On face value, and this is certainly the connection that the Nitziv in his classic Sefer on the Shiltos, the connection that he makes is with the Shita of Tosfos here in Pesachim, to a even more famous Shita in Tosfos that appears in a few places in Shas. It's also the Shita of the Rosh in Avodah Zarah. So Tosfos in Avodah Zarah says that any time a person is confronted in a circumstance where it's not one of the big three Averos, someone comes to you, they put a gun to your head and say you have to go ahead and you have to eat this cheeseburger. So the Rambam says very famously, if you decide to give up your life, what's the lashon the Rambam uses? Anybody know? That it's mi'avid atzmo. It's as though you committed suicide. If it's a case not of the big three Averos, then you all always have to violate the Avera rather than give up your life. For the Rambam, what is predominant is v'chai b'hem. You have to live by the mitzvot. But Tosfos and the Rosh and others, they say not that way. They hold that under any circumstance, a person always has the right to give up their life rather than violate an Avera. Whether that which is at stake is Shabbos or Yontiv or Treifus or Fasting Yom Kippur, a person always has the right to say, I will give my life rather than violate the Avera in front of me under all circumstances, says Tosfos. So on face value, that would seem to be the same sheet of Tosos here. They didn't have to give up their life. It was not really Avodah Zarah. It was only the Ndarte Shamelech. But Tosos Lishitaso feels that a person has the right to always give up their life, even when it's not mandated, even when it's not a chiyuv. Anybody here perhaps want to share a thought why this Tosfos is not like the Tosfos in Avodah Zarah? Why this is even more novel, more of a chiddush than what we mentioned before? So what some achrodim they feel is that this Tosfos, and people want to see this discussion inside, is a very popular set of svarim called the Minchas Asher by Rav Asher Weiss. So Rav Asher Weiss in his discussion in Parshas Va'era, so he feels this Tosfos is even a greater chiddush. Why is that? Because Tosfos in general in Shas feels that rather than violate an Avera, one can give up their life. Rather, a person can look at the last couple lines in Tosfos from Sechas Avodah Zarah, the last two lines. Let's read inside. V'tzarchi in v'imrotza l'hachmir al atzmo, this is Marmak number 4, afilu b'shar mitzvot rashai, k'mo rav abba bar zimra yushalmi, shahaya eitzel ova kochavim. So Amar Leh, the Ovechachavim says, Ochel nevela, v'ilo katlina l'cha, I'm going to kill you. So Amar Leh, ibayis l'mitli katov, if you want to kill me, kill me. U'machmer hayam, d'mestama b'tzina hava. In other words, he was being machmer himself. It was in private, he was machmer for himself. But that's a case where it was actually in Aveira, the Tosfo says, you don't want to violate that Aveira, you can give up your life. But in this case, in Avodah Zarah, in Pesachim, what was the Avera that Hananya, Mishava, Azariah would have been violating if they bow down to this idol? Even Tosfos in general in Shas that says, I can go ahead and give up my life, that's only to not violate an Avera, to not violate a mitzvah. But in this case in Pesachim, what mitzvah, what Avera would there have been by bowing down to something that's not in Avodah Zarah at all? This Tosfos is even more of a chiddush than the Tosfos in Avodah Zarah. So the Rishonim therefore struggle, and the Acharonim struggle, is what is the possible justification? There's no Avera, there's no Avodah Zarah, there's no other mitzvah. What therefore would have been the justification for what Hananiah Mishav Azariah did, if in fact there was no Avodah Zarah and there's no Avera that was being violated? So the Rishonim try to understand this position of Hananiah Mishav Azariah in one of two different ways. The first is the Shita of the Ramban that appears in the Shita Mikubetzes in Ksuvos, which is where the major sugya took place. The sugya in Ksuvos tells us that if Hananiah Mishav Azariah would have been tortured, then they would have worshipped, they would have bowed down to this idol. And the obvious question is, if it's really Avodah Zarah, then what does torture make a difference? So the Rishonim try to figure out what exactly was the Avera here. So the Ramban said famously that you're right. It was not Avodah Zarah. Why then did they give up their life? So said the Ramban, because there was Maris Ayin of Avodah Zarah. People would have heard, people would have thought that they heard that they were bowing down to an idol. No one would have known the details. They would have thought that is Avodah Zarah Mamish. So because of Maris Ayin of Avodah Zarah, so therefore, the Ramban said, that's why they gave up their life. The Maris Ayin is so significant that was worth giving up your life for. There's a very famous sheet of the Ran and Maseches of Avodah Zarah. The Ran, the Gemara discusses the following case. There is a river, and next to the river there is an idol. So can a person under a, he's thirsty, he wants to bend down, drink from the river, but perhaps the perception might be that in fact he's bowing down to the idol, which is down the river. So can a person do that under those circumstances? The Gemara says no. And the Ran says there an amazing shita. He says the Maris Ayin of Avodah Zarah is Yargva Yavar as well. A person has to give up their life not just for Avodah Zarah, says the Ran, but even Maris Ayin of Avodah Zarah. Even the Abizrayu of Avodah Zarah itself might be Yargva Yavar. So an amazing shita this past Shabbos. There's a topic that comes up in Parshas Va'era about going into churches, which is obviously a popular topic for people that want to travel in Israel and in Europe and other places, people who have to be there for funerals of sorts. So there was a discussion by some of the later Acharonim about a case of going to a funeral for one of the heads of state. This is back in 19th century in Europe. So are they allowed to do so? Mishum Eva. They're concerned. They don't go. There is going to be some backlash from the community. There's someone that I know in Baltimore, someone of a certain stature that was invited to Reagan's funeral, the same question as well. So the answer was that absolutely not. That even to go into a church itself is an abisrayu of Avodah Zarah, which according to many Rishonim in person is Yariva Yavor. So if an abisrayu of Avodah Zarah, again, we never think of going to a church in such strong terms, that cannot have any dealings. There's no shaykhis to Mishum Eva. Mishum Eva is a case where maybe there's a din derabanan, then our concern of what the non-Jews may think might overwhelm that din derabanan. But in a case of this, where maybe even an abisrayu of a bodhis kochavim, so that cannot be done under any circumstances. As a parenthetic note, I heard that maybe perhaps people were in the Rav Shir back in 1963, and it's really perhaps during the Rav's heyday, but when Kennedy's funeral took place, even the question that the students asked about watching on TV. So I didn't hear this obviously directly in any tape or anything the Rav wrote, but supposedly he said that even to do that was something which he wasn't comfortable with. It's almost like giving a certain chashivas to a ceremony taking place in a church. Again, it sounds like definitely a strong statement, but to see the extent of the tentacles, if you will, of the Surim of Avodah Zarah, that's a sheet of the Ramban. Rabbeinu David, who's well known only for his commentary on Maseches Pesachim, he gives a different pshat of what was it the Hananiah Mishav Azariah were doing. And this is an amazing sheet in the Rishonim. Rabbeinu David said, everybody knew that this was not Avodah Zarah. Everybody knew Nebuchadnezzar's deal, that he wanted people to bow down to his idol. It was not Avodah Zarah Mamish. It wasn't Marasayin Avodah Zarah. So what was the problem, according to Rabbeinu David? Very simply, that to bow down to a statue of the Nebuchadnezzar would be a prisas kavod shem shemayim. It would be a lessening for leaders of Bnei Israel to bow down to an honorific of the Nebuchadnezzar is something that would reduce the kavod for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that in and of itself, says Rabbeinu David, was reason enough to give up one's life, even in a circumstance where there's just a reduction of Kavod L'Shem Shemayim, that was enough to Rabbeinu David for them to go ahead and sacrifice themselves. Anybody just by show of hands have a problem with that shita? So understand perhaps, please. Right.
Now the leaders of Israel would have to relate to him.
Right. It would definitely be a dramatic scene if that was the case. But, right. So certainly, please.
Because we've got a full Hashem.
Right.
It's not really like Aleph Hashem. It's just a lessening of Kavod. It's not, we assume that.
Right. So that's a good question. What does Chil Hashem mean? Is Chil Hashem, is there a black and white definition, which is really the issue in Beit David, of what it means to desecrate Shem Shemayim or not, and what should be the response to that? Certainly the point made about Bush and your issue, it certainly opens up the doorway for a fascinating discussion. So what might the Shita of Rabbeinu David, and other Rishonim give the same thing as well? I don't just want to paint him in one corner. What's that? So the Shas HaShmad, you're right, but even in the case of Shas HaShmad, and there's the shoelaces. Okay, so hold on for 1 second, because we're going to discuss that in a moment. But even in the case of Shas HaShmad, on face value, you would think there has to be some Avera itself. That seems to be the pashtus of the Gemara, and we'll get into the shoelace case that people are referring to, maybe in a few moments. Okay, so what is the Achim Might Deshita? Please, I'm sorry. Right, absolutely. So in other words, so this halacha, in light of that, and the bracha that said, et cetera, certainly is a fascinating question. Perhaps the specific historical context in Buchanetzar, it's not just a person, perhaps as a George Bush figure, but as a person specifically that was trying to uproot and did uproot, life and avoda, et cetera, so that maybe those normal dinim would not apply. I mean, normally the din is that we give respect to a leader. Perhaps maybe that's not a clear-cut lessening of Kavod Shemayim, but in a case where the very figure is one that was trying to uproot the community, then perhaps the whole dynamic then changes. Now, we know, and everyone here knows here, the Gemaras that appears in Sanhedrin, and Ksuvos, and Psachim, and other places, about the famous din of Yarva Yavor. So everyone knows that when it comes to Yarva Yavor, there are three averos that no matter when, no matter where, no matter what the circumstances, in public or in private, a person has to sacrifice their life for: Gila Rayos, Shvichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah. The next stage in the Gemara is that Bishas Hashmad, actually working backwards a little bit, a person also has to give their life publicly or privately, even in the extent, as was mentioned before, that the person persecuting us, Bishas HaShmad, they want to change the nature of our shoelaces, which we'll discuss, or the straps of our shoes, which we'll discuss in a moment. Even that, the Gemara says, is worth giving up one's life for. And then the third level is that if it's before Hesia. If it's in public, even not during Shas HaShmad, so a person has to go ahead and give up their life, al pi kiddush Hashem. So the Gemara asked the famous question. We were living in Persia not during a Shas HaShmad. Esther violated in Avera, and wasn't that bifarhesia? Wasn't there a public sin to her relationship with Achashverosh? So what do you say before we analyze this question of the Gemara is the obvious question. What should the Gemara have said? So Gemara should have said, why are we concerned about the Farhesia? Isn't Esther having a relationship with Achashverosh violate Gila Arias itself? Which is something, a famous question that Tosfos asked, and he gave a number of different answers. Why have a problem that Esther was with Farhesia? One should answer that Esther was Gila Arias. Okay, so we'll leave Tosfos' answer, and people want to see this more by Richos. It's the Tosfos at the beginning of Ksuvos is the major place Tosfos appears. So the Gemara gives two famous answers. So one is that Esther was karka olam, that she was passive, she didn't really do anything, which raises a fascinating question: can a woman, or does a woman ever have to give up her life for Gila Rayos, if her role is a passive one. And the second answer is that Hanas Atzmo Shani, Achashverosh, from everything we know, was not an ideologue. His intent of having a relationship with Esther was not based on ideological grounds or trying to get her to give up her religion or whatever the case was. It was simply for his own Hana'a. So when it's for your own Hana'a, and it's before Hesia in a public setting, so that's not a case of Yarva Yavor. That's not a case where a person has to give up their own life, only if it's for more ideological reasons. So if I were to ask you, I to put on a lumdis cap for a moment, how would we analyze the necessity, the need to give up one's life, al pi kiddush Hashem? What is the mechayiv? What is driving a person in this need to give up one's life, al pi kiddush Hashem? What are two different possibilities? So the first possibility is that what generates the necessity, the mechayiv, to give up one's life is the Chumras Havera itself, is the stringency of the Havera in question. When we have a competition between V'chai Bohem versus Avodah Zarah, V'chai Bohem versus Shvichas Damim, V'chai Bohem versus Gila Rayos, what trumps V'chai Bohem is the Chumras Havera of these three things. One simply cannot violate these averos under any circumstances, and by doing so, a person makes a chila Hashem, and by giving up one's life, so they make a kiddush Hashem. But what drives the conflict, if you will, is the ma'is avera and the chumras avera of these three issues. The other possibility is not the way. The other possibility is that what drives the necessity to give up one's life is whether or not there's going to be a kiddush Hashem or a chila Hashem. It's simply that in a situation of potential chila Hashem, a person has to go ahead and to give up their life. Perhaps an expression of chila Hashem are these three averos. But the mechayiv itself is the potential of making a kiddush Hashem versus chas v'shalom making a chila Hashem, as opposed to the chumrah of the ma'is avera itself. What might be a nafka mina between these two approaches? I'd be interested if anybody can share a thought. Is what drives the need to give your life the ma'is avera, or is it the impact, the kiddush Hashem, chila Hashem? Please. Okay, excellent. So hold on there for 1 second. Let me just mention something which is famous and it's beferish in the Rishonim. There's a very famous machlokas between the Baal HaMor and the Ramban in his Milchamos in Maseches Avodah Zarah. Listen to this amazing Gemara, machlokas. The Gemara tells us that in a case where there's an Aveira b'farhesia, someone asks you to eat a cheeseburger in public, it's based on what the intent of the person was. Is it for his Hana'a, or is it because he ideologically wants you to violate the Avera? Let's say that same question is raised by one of the big three Averos. Actually, forget Shvichas Damim for a second. Let's say when it comes to Avodah Zarah, you've done something to instigate and to infuriate your neighbor. Your neighbor drags you, he knocks you unconscious, he puts you in his car, he drags you to the local church, and he makes you, I'm not exactly sure what Avodah Zarah b'zman hazeh, it makes you do something that might be called Avodah Zarah in the context of a church, not for ideological reasons, but simply because this is his perverse way of torturing you and getting pleasure from making you do something you don't like because you have been a bad neighbor to him. Under those circumstances, does a person have to give up their life rather than worship Avodah Zarah, where the only reason was his hana'a, his pleasure in doing so? So the Baal HaMor said the following. The Baal HaMor said, if it's only for his pleasure, if it's only for his hana'a, then just to worship the idol is not a real chila Hashem, because it's not for ideological reasons. Therefore, a person would not have to give up his life. Where the Ramban and the Mulchamo says, what are you talking about? They're still doing the ma'is avera of worshiping idols. You're still violating by worshiping Avodah Zarah. Who cares what his intention was? Who cares what his hana'a is? So therefore we see that if the issue is the ma'is avera, who cares what the intention of the idol worshiper is? But if the issue is the impact of the chila Hashem versus the kiddush Hashem, then maybe perhaps the circumstance and the context, as Ishelman pointed out, certainly is significant. What do you want to...
In many ways, by the Baal HaMor,
Right. So according to Baal Mor, Maris Ayin, that would be an issue. I'm not sure. He doesn't sort of address it directly. Maybe Echanami, in the case of Maris Ayin, maybe he would agree. Or maybe he has a different formulation with Maris Ayin than the Ramban does. Okay.
Okay.
Right, or maybe in a case where it's Lanaz Atzmo, maybe it's so obvious that maybe it's not even Maris Ayin. It's not even that, which is an interesting question of Maris Ayin in general, where the obvious circumstances, I'm sure this is things that people encounter all the time as far as restaurants, where it's so obvious of what the nature of the circumstances is, and perhaps Maris Ayin doesn't apply, which is an interesting question just in living life in the business world or the world today. Okay, that's going to be one nafkamina. Another nafkamina. There is a discussion in the Acharonim based on the sheet of the Rambam as who is Chayiv in Yarva Yavur. Who's Chayiv in the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem? So the Rambam's Lashon, if people look actually Mar Malkum number 5, it's not where we have this here, so it says, Kol Beis Yisrael Mitzuvin al Kiddush Hashem, Hagodol Hazeh. The Rambam uses a very unusual language. This great mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. So the way that some Acharonim learn this Rambam is that Kol Beis Yisrael comes for what? Comes la'afuke, to exclude non-Jews. There's a suffix in the Gemara at the end of the 8th parak in Sanhedrin, whether non-Jews chayv in Kiddush Hashem. So some say this language comes to exclude non-Jews. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in Parashat Emor says not that way. Rav Yaakov says, what is this language Kol Beis Yisrael come to include? A katan. That even a child is chayiv in Kiddush Hashem. Now one could say the following. If the reason to give up your life is because of the chumrah of the Maisa Veira, that you cannot bow down to an idol, you cannot be involved in Gila Rayos, then perhaps one can say that a katan is not chayiv in that mitzvah because a katan is not a Gil mitzvot yet. Perhaps is not chayiv to give up his life. But if you say, as Rav Yaakov said, based on Pasuk, v'nigdashti b'sof b'nei Yisrael, the result of your behavior is a Kiddush Hashem, then that result of bringing about a Kiddush Hashem, says Rav Yaakov, is someone that anybody's chayiv, a katan, an adult, or anybody else. That's only be another nafkamina as well. Another possible nafkamina, and this is something that unfortunately, if one looks at the Sefer Shaz Chuvas Mimamakim, we can discuss these issues in the comfort of the first, where are we? Of Reuben Shul in the year 2008. Unfortunately, people, many of our own relatives, battled and had to think about in a very lamaisidic way the Shaila. Does a person say a bracha when they die al pi Kiddush Hashem? And this is something that Rav Oshri in the Shas Ruzmei Makim said that he was asked dozens of times in his community in Kovna. Does a person say a bracha, yes or no? So the Shita of the Shla, quoted in the Pisrei Tshuva, is that a person would say bracha al pi Kiddush Hashem. A person, fortunately, is being led to their death, they would say a bracha. Other poskim say not that way. And I thought to say that perhaps maybe it's the same machlokas. If what generates the obligation of giving up your life is Kiddush Hashem, and the reverse, not making a chilah Hashem, then that is the etzem mitzvah itself. And that would then generate the bracha of the Kadoshim Shemayim Barabim. But if you say that what really generates the obligation is simply not doing a certain avera, not doing certain actions, then to say a bracha because you're not doing an avera perhaps does not make sense, and therefore that's perhaps the sheet of the poskim that say a bracha is not said when it comes to the Kadoshim Shemayim Barabim. One last nafkamina we mentioned before is this Machlok, as we said before, Tosos and the Rambam. Can a person give up their life in cases where there's no Chumras Haveira, to not eat Shreif, to not be Mechal Shabbos? So if you say again, like what the Rambam perhaps espouses, that Yarva Yavor is that because the Mais Haveira is so Chamor, and that trumps V'chai Behen, that only when that Mais Haveira is Chamor, like the big three, would you then go ahead and give up your life? But if you say, as Tosos seems to say in many places, that what generates the obligation to give up your life is the opportunity to be Mekadeshim Shemayim Barabin, then perhaps there are circumstances unrelated to those big three Averos, where a person still has an opportunity to be Mekadeshim Shemayim Barabin, and therefore a person should, by all means, as Tosos, has the right to give up their life. There's another area. I'm going to speak about this for a few minutes, and then we'll take questions, and then we'll conclude, that certainly this same sheet of Tosfos seems to be on display. Let me mention, by the way, as a parenthetic point before we move forward, that there's a interesting discussion in the Rishonim that maybe Tosfos and the Rosh were wrong. They quote the Yerushalmi, the Gemara we just mentioned, the Tosfos we mentioned of Avodah Zarah, that there was a person, Rav Abba Bar Zimra, who gave up their life rather than eat treif. And based on that Yerushalmi, Tosfos and the Rosh say the person can always do that in a case of Yarva Yavar, even when it's not the big three. So what other Rishonim, they say that it's fascinating if people base their decisions on life on the Tosfos, that in fact at the end of the Yerushalmi, a part they never quoted, in fact indicates what Abba Bar Zimra did was wrong. Right? The very Yerushalmi that these Rishonim quote, that there is a version of Yerushalmi that he was criticized for giving up his life rather than not eating nevela, and therefore the very same Yerushalmi, which is sort of the backbone of Tosfos' understanding in general of Yarva Yavor, was challenged by other Rishonim and said that Tosfos used this in a way that was inappropriate. There's another, just before we move on, anybody have any questions before we move on? What's it? Right. Why would that be the case? First, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? So. Uh-huh. If you did it anyway, I'm not sure. Just one last, by the way, and this is just simply an echo of the machlokes before, just one last possible discussion, is that we mentioned before, gentlemen mentioned about the arkasa, the misana, the shoelaces. What exactly, in the case of a shas hashmad, even if, let's say, the Romans would want you to change the straps on your shoes, so then you have to give up your life. The question is, what was the nature of that aveira exactly? What's wrong? The straps of the shoes, that's why you give up your life? So how do we understand that Gemara by the Shas HaShmad? So what some people assume, this is Shita of Rashi and Tosas as well, although they have a difference of opinion, what the Mitzias was, what they assumed was that there was a Tznius way, I don't understand the history behind this exactly, of the way that a person would strap their sandals versus a way which was not in consonance with Tznius or with what the Bnei Yisrael used to do. To give up your life just for the tsanua way of dressing, a person would have to do the b'shas hashmad. The Rif, the person looks in the back of Sanhedrin, says not the way. The Rif says that there is an actual b'chusem lo se lechu, right? That this to go ahead and to change your sandals to a Roman fashion would be violating the issur d'oraisa b'chusem lo se lechu, and it's because you violate the issur d'oraisa, says the Rif, that's why you have to go ahead and give up your life. And to some degree, the echoes are the same of that machlokas as well. Is what drives sometimes Yarva Yavor, even though this case may be a little different because of Shas Hashmad, is the Maisa Veira of B'chusem Lo Seleichu, or even anything that perhaps is reducing the Kavachim Shemayim, or changing, or making Chaloshem, that itself would generate the obligation. That clearly is what's behind that very surprising sheet of Rabbeinu David. Rabbeinu David, who said the Hananya, Mishael, Azariah gave up their life just so that there's not Pchisas Kavachim Shemayim, clearly is in line with this thinking of Tosos and the other Rishonim, that what generates the obligation to give up their life is not to make a Chil Hashem and to make a Kiddush Hashem, even when the Maisa Veira itself is not so pronounced. Now this really leads to a discussion which is certainly in its entirety beyond the scope of this year, but something which is so tied into the shiur that we just gave that certainly would be appropriate. And that's namely the famous sheet of Tosfos that appears in about four or five different places about people choosing to give up their life. Everything that we've discussed up to now has been the conflict of either do the Aveira or you're going to go ahead and be killed by a third party, by a third person. Either worship of Avodah Zarah, or you're going to be punished to the utmost of the law. Question is, let's say if a person themselves makes the decision of giving up their own life, of saying, I know what awaits me in the future, and I now want to go ahead and be chovos atzmo. A person wants to go ahead and commit suicide. So how does that play into this conversation as well? So this is something which has been debated by the Rishonim, clearly, and it was never stated explicitly, but I believe that the Rambam would assume that a person by no means can ever do that, to choose to give up one's life. the more you say that the need to give up your life is driven by the Maisa Vera, the more you would say that I don't have the choice right now to give up my life before I'm even dealing with that circumstance. But Tosfos in several different places clearly says not that way. And there's really four different circumstances where Tosfos seems to assume that a person can give up their life. One of the most famous is the sheet of the Das Zakenim. The Das Zakenim was one of the versions of Tosfos, commenting, we didn't have it printed out, but it's only if you've never seen it before, it's really a Mar Mokum that has to be seen, commenting on the Pasuk in Parshas Noach, Aches Dimchem, that your blood you can't slaughter. So what does the word Ach mean? Even. The word Ach seems to be unusual. So there's a Medrash Rabbah that the Das Zakenim quotes, which has been quoted by other Bali Tosfos as well, that there's a Havamina that even Shaul HaMelech could not give up his life. That even Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were not allowed to kill themselves. Shaul was not allowed to kill themselves. Comes the Pasuk Ach to exclude Shaul HaMelech. That even though Shaul HaMelech took his life and he killed himself, that was not a problem. Because, again, there was somehow a Kiddush Hashem involved. We'll get back to that discussion about Shaul HaMelech in a moment. The rest of the Das Zakenim discusses a famous case. We'll hold that for a moment. But the Das Zakenim says that during the Crusades in France, so there was one Rav, and the Rav said that the Crusades are coming in. We're concerned about the torture that the children are going to undergo, and we're concerned that because of the torture they might have to endure, they might convert to Christianity. So the Rav organized that the children would kill themselves before being tortured so that they would not convert to Christianity. And based on that medrash that says that what Shaul did was appropriate, so the Rav said, Ach es dimchem, Ach comes to exclude cases of suicide where there may be a Chil Hashem involved or the possibility for Kiddush Hashem. And that's how the story went. There was another Rav who saw what he did and said that you were a murderer, and he was aghast. And the other Rav said that if I'm correct, that what you did was inappropriate, you will die a Misa Mishuna, you will die an unusual death. And the Christians came in, and then somehow his skin was taken off and bugs were placed beneath his skin. The Vitosis goes through a very graphic description. And it turned out that at the end of the day, that the Crusades basically came to an end, the children would have been saved. But this would seem to be, at least in one opinion, where to commit suicide, so not to be tortured, because you may convert to Christianity, was allowed, or according to at least one opinion, that to take one's life to stave off potential conversion certainly was allowed. There's another impression Tosfos given. And another impression Tosfos appears in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Ches Med Aleph, and in Gittin, Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis, and discusses the famous case of Hanina ben Tradjon, where Hanina ben Tradjon was tortured, and his students, what did his students tell his Rebbe? They said, open up your mouth and end your life. Hanina ben Tradjon knew he was dying anyway. Anybody remember his famous response? Let the one who gave life come and take away life. The implication might have been that he didn't want to end his life prematurely. So Tosfos is there in Avodah Zarah, and also another Tosfos that appears in Gittin, as I said, by the famous story of the 400 children, that in a case where you're nervous that people are going to go ahead and torture you to make you violate mitzvos, the case of the 400 students, kids on the boat, is something we read in the Kinos, where they were being brought to be a zona, to be a harlot, and she said, I don't want to go ahead and be tortured to do this, so they took their own life, and Tosfos says that is okay. Even to not have to convert, but just, I don't want to be tortured, so I don't violate Avero, says Tosfos, that would certainly be okay. The way that some Rishonim, a third example, discussed by Shaul HaMelech, why did Shaul HaMelech take his own life? What was he concerned about? Was he concerned that they might make him violate Avero? So that's what the Ritva says. But others say not that way. Others said that he was concerned, similar to the Rabbeinu David, about what would it make to the image of Bnei Yisrael, to the image of the Jewish king, that he was taken, he was tortured, and based on that potential Chil Hashem, even though he was not going to violate any Averos, says some Rishonim, just the Gilyoni HaTosvos, he took his own life rather than the potential Chilul Hashem that might occur down the road. And lastly, the first case we mentioned was the Das Kanim, taking one's life rather than converting. The second was Tosfos, that says taking one life rather than being tortured to violate Averos. The Gilyoni HaTosfos and Avodah Zarah, that says Charles took his life rather than the Bechisas Kavachim Shemayim. And lastly, there's one understanding of the Bali Tosfos that says, even though you may not violate any Avera down the road, but one is concerned for torture for themselves, then one is allowed to, say the Bali Tosfos, take their own life, even though there may be no fallout as far as Shmiras HaMitzvos. There was a famous question raised when they came to evacuate the Kovna ghetto. So they came and they asked Rav Oshri that they had heard that the Germans, when they were evacuating previous ghettos, that they had tortured the women and children. And the concern was that how could he stand by and watch his children and his wife be tortured? Forget about any Avir Saldas. That wasn't necessarily the intent necessarily of the Nazis at that moment. So Rav Oshri in his tshuva so debated this Tosfos. Can a person take their own life rather than face torture down the road? He left it as far as lumnus and sarachim, but he told the person to not do it because you're never sure. Maybe you'll survive. Maybe you won't be the person tortured. Maybe you'll be able to have a normal life down the road. You know, certainly, this discussion in the Bali Tosfos points again to a much broader discussion of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem, very similar to what that gentleman said in the back. It's a Kiddush Hashem not based on the Maisa Aveira, but a Kiddush Hashem and a Chilul Hashem based on the impact of the Kavod Shem Shemayim. To go ahead and torture people who are upstanding Jews by the Nazis, and the potential Chilul Hashem, at least in the thinking of the Bali Tosfos, that would ensue as a result, even though there's no Maisa Aveira involved perhaps, that itself is something that in a broader definition of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem certainly is considered and thought about in halacha. Let me review some of the shitos, and we'll conclude with the story. The people, if they want, can ask a question and make ha'aras afterwards. We mentioned there was a discussion of the decision of Hanani Mishael Vazaria to give up their life based on what the frogs did. We mentioned the shita of Tosfos and all the Rishonim that asked why did they need the frogs? Wasn't this the case of Avodah Zarah? The two answers were either they could have escaped, or B, it was not Avodah Zarah Mamish itself. It was in Dar Tesha Melech. And they could have bowed down to it, but they chose not to based on the frogs. We mentioned that this seems to be the machlokas between the Rambam and Tosfos in general, whether a person has the right to give their life in cases that are not the big three averos. Rav Asher Weiss, who mentions that this tzitz of Tosfos is even more of a chiddush because there is no ma'isa avera involved at all. It was just the symbol of the kingdom. The two shitas in the Rishonim, how to therefore then explain what Hanani Mishael Vazariah did. The Ramban by Maris Ayin, that Maris Ayin of Avodah Zarah itself is Yariv Yavor, and that's the shita of the Ran as well, in Maseches Avodah Zarah. The shita of Rabbeinu David that says that even though it was only in Dar Tesha Melech, that would have been a reduction to Kavod Shem Shemayim. The basic understanding of Yariv Yavor, is it based on the Maisa Aveira that cannot be violated, or is it based on the potential for Kiddush Hashem versus Chilul Hashem? The various nafkaminas, machlokas in the Balamur and the Ramban, about Hanos Atzmo, even in the case of the big three Averos, whether or not children are chayiv in Kiddush Hashem, whether or not there's a bracha, whether, again, you can give your life in cases where it's voluntary, and also the case of a Rakhtad Masana, even though it's not the same thing, but the echoes of whether or not a person can give their life even when there's no Maisa Avera. And certainly how that dovetails to the positions of Tosfos in general, giving up one's life for Tsar. Let me just mention from more of a historical perspective, and I encourage people to take the opportunity to research this topic. How much do we want to evaluate the shita of the Rambam versus Tosfos in a historical light? One might claim, and again, this certainly walks a slippery slope as far as Piskei Halacha, that the Rambam, whose life essentially was not filled of the challenges of the Crusade, where that was not part and parcel of almost the societal milieu around him, that perhaps maybe there was much more of a hard line in regards to giving up one's life, versus Tosfos, where the Bali Tosfos were living simply in the middle of the Crusades, and these shitos reflect the reality of the people around them. 2 points in that. The first is that it's only difficult to engage in these conversations about societal issues affecting Piskei Halacha. That's A. B, just as a purely, to be fair historically, people sort of look at the Rambam's life as being this glorified existence where he was this and he was that and he was the doctor and he was everything. The truth is the Rambam spent between the years of 13 and 25 escaping, not Christians. Christians, the Rambam believed, were over the Avodah Zarah, as opposed to Muslims, where he said it's not the case. But escaping persecution from Muslims that wanted to convert him. People just want to see a very interesting marmako. This is on a side note. Look in Macholos Asuros, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Zayin, where in the old Mishneh Torah edition, the Rambam says that the Yayin of any Avodas Kochavim, so a person Stam Yayin, you can't drink because it may be Avodah Zarah. Then, in the more recent Rambams, in the Frankel, which did not undergo the censorship of the earlier Rambams, the Rambam specifically says that Yishma'elim are not over the Avodah Zarah, but Notzrim, he uses that word, Christians, are over the Avodah Zarah in the context of the Ayin Netzach and others as well. So first of all, it's not so clear that the Rambam didn't have to deal with the persecution as well. But what is certainly clear is that Rabbeinu Tam, in about 6 or 7 different places in Shas, validated the behavior of the communities in France and Germany, whether it be in cases of Kiddush Hashem, whether it be in cases of dealing with non-Jews as moneylenders, whether it be in cases of how can we sell to Christians during the week of Christmas and other holidays as well, where Rabbeinu Tam validated certain halachic behavior of those communities. Not post facto, it must be X, Y, and Z, but out of the respect of the Kedusha, this is an article that Rabbi Kanerfogel and others discuss, the holiness, if you will, of the French community, the recognition that the behavior reflected Kiddush Hashem, didn't just reflect easy way out, but that the behavior itself reflected the sanctity of the community, and perhaps one can understand many of the Piskei Halacha of Rabbeinu Tam, of giving up one's life rather than torture, as an understanding and a respect for the motives and the desire of Kiddush Hashem of the communities in France and Germany. Again, I just recommend, there's an article by Jacob Katz and Dr. Soloveitchik and Rabbi Kanerfogel on these topics. Let me conclude with the following story. Baruch Hashem in our own lives, so the opportunities for Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem in these areas, thank God, are non-existent. And even sometimes, sort of the typical Kiddush Hashem that people say, you stand for this person on a bus, okay, those are certainly nice ideas. But I think the mentality and the emphasis of Kiddush Hashem is really reflected really on a day-to-day basis. And the opportunities of bringing Shem Shemayim and of giving the kavod to Shem Shemayim, of bringing down God's name in a way which is impactful and beautiful in this world. And I heard a certain story last week that touched me, and I wanted to share it. And it's the story of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Shlomo Zalman, you can talk about his greatness in the most very simple and beautiful ways that he lived his life for days on end. But it's a story right before his death, about 17 years ago. So he was sitting in his home in Shari Chesed on Erev Shabbos, and there was a knock on the door by a father and his son. And the father said, this is the type of thing that if you imagine your children would never forgive you for. His father said they've been practicing the Haftorah. The bar mitzvah is the very next day in the shul Matisdorf, and they've been learning the wrong Haftorah. You know, the father was teaching his kid, he looked in the wrong place, and they prepared the wrong Haftorah. And as you can imagine, back from our children, our own bar mitzvah, to have to worry about that right before you're supposed to go on stage is terrifying. And he said, my son can't do it, he's going to get completely permission, what should I do? So Shlomo Zalman said, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. You do the Haftorah that you planned on doing. It's the wrong Haftorah. Okay, fine. Tell the Gabbai it's not a problem. You can imagine the scene. Right. Okay, so the very next day, they're about to start laning. And who walks in with Shlomo Zalman Orbach? And anybody knows Yushalayim knows the walk for an 84-year-old man from Shari Chesed to Matisdorf, for anybody. 2 hours, or whatever the walk must have been. Ready, what are you doing here? What brings you here? He said, I could only imagine the reaction of the Gabbai when you told him that Rosh Shlomo Zalman said, my son can do the other Haftorah, the fight and the embarrassment. So I walked over just to make sure that things went smoothly at that age. And that's really a living embodiment among Jews, in front of Jews, of that sense of bringing the Shem Shemayim to this world in a way that is exalted, in a way that is beautiful. It's not always about the giving up one's life or standing up on buses, but it's the simple behavior of bringing a Kadosh Baruch Hu's name to this world in a way that brings honor to him and hopefully honor to us as well. So in the schus of that, in the Torah we learned, hopefully we've got the opportunity to make Kiddushi Hashem and stay away from Chilulei Hashem. So take any questions. Rabbi, have... Okay, please. Come. Right. Right. So certainly, according to the Shita, I didn't speak about this, but this is a, you know, we always thought growing up the Masada was this amazing action. So the truth is, if you look what the result would have been, what were they fighting against? You know, right at, they're basically fighting against not being taken as slaves to Rome. It wasn't a life or death issue. Maybe once they fought back, then it would have been a life and death issue. So according to many Shitas in the Rishonim, and what they did was absolutely wrong. It was absolutely inappropriate. If you want to say like this Tosfos, like what Shaul HaMelech did, that Shaul HaMelech took his life rather than the Bechis HaShem Shemayim of a king being taken, and all those other elements, a much broader expansive view of Kiddush Shemayim, then perhaps, again, there's room to say that what they did in Masada certainly was appropriate.